such good way in those songs. And that last song in particular, I requested him to lead because it fits so well with our lesson tonight. If you want to turn to Daniel chapter 1, Daniel chapter 1, we'll take our lesson from this very powerful chapter this evening. I don't know how many of you know the Drum family in Florida. I went to school with Adam Drum and his father as a gospel preacher for many, many years in that area. Worked with Ralph Walker, if you know that name. But they just lost his wife, Kathleen. And I think her service was today. So I know a lot of hearts are heavy with sadness. So be praying for them. His name is Ron Drum, and lost his good wife, such a humble, wonderful, godly woman in many ways. So be praying for them, if you don't mind. Well, pretty soon, school will be starting up for several of us. And I think I have all this right, so I'm just going to go out on a limb and make, if I get it wrong, I get it wrong. But Olivia Haynes is going to be a senior this year, and her sister Allie is jumping into college, her first year of college. And Reagan Porter is going to be a junior this year, and Emily Colquette will be entering her sophomore year. So a lot of movement going on here pretty soon in August, and we have many kiddos that are heading into school as well. So with going to school, there are lots of challenges. We have to be kind of set apart in a world, in a kind of a culture that does not put Christ first. So we're going to stand out, and that's the goal, right? To stand out as Christians, to be lights where you are planted. As Christians, you're going to have different standards than maybe the classmates and people that you'll be around, but what a great opportunity, right, for you to stand out and show other people what Christ living in you looks like. And so this sermon is more directed towards that group, and I think it's directed towards anybody. We're all in a world in darkness, and we need to stand out. We need to do what is right. It's important to understand the context of Daniel 1, because Daniel was about to go to school in Daniel chapter 1, whether he liked it or not. So understanding kind of the historical context of Daniel 1 really emphasizes the lessons in Daniel 1. So I thought we would start looking at verses 1 and 2 that kind of give us kind of what is going on in the world before we zero in Daniel. So it says in the third year, verse 1, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the vessels of the house of God, and he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. So this is telling us, this has happened in the third year of King Jehoiakim, that Nebuchadnezzar came to Jerusalem, besieged it, conquered it, and was able to take some vessels back to his God. Now, Jehoiakim, his father, was good King Josiah, who reigned for 31 years, and in my opinion, probably the best king that Judah had under the divided kingdom. So Josiah's son, Jehoahaz, became king right after him, and he reigned all of 3 months. And so Josiah went to battle with Egypt, actually went north, and Egypt was already there, went to battle with him, and King Necho, or Pharaoh Necho, killed Josiah in battle. Well, on Egypt's way back to Egypt, they stopped by Jerusalem and said, Jehoahaz, I know you've been reigning for 3 months, but you're coming with me, and I want the checks to be made out to Egypt. And so he takes Jehoahaz back with him and puts his brother Jehoiakim as king in his place. So this is the second son of Josiah reigning as king over Jerusalem, over Judah. And he reigns for about 11 years in Jerusalem, Jehoiakim. So it's during his third year of reign that Nebuchadnezzar comes and says, you know those checks that you were sending to Egypt? Make them to Babylon. Now this happened in the year 605. And you say, well, whoop-de-doo, right? 605. No, that is a very important year, not only in Judah's history, but in world history. This is a very critical year. One of the most important battles in history occurred in this year. And this is the Battle of Carchemish. And this was when Assyria, who was kind of the main nation in this time, when Assyria teamed up with Egypt to fight Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, and all those nations kind of in the Mesopotamia area. So they had a huge battle, the Battle of Carchemish, and guess who wins? Nebuchadnezzar. So this was kind of the trading of hands. Instead of Assyria being the power of the world, now it's Babylon. Okay, so that's 605, Battle of Carchemish, really big. And so, after winning that battle and becoming the main nation, he stops by Jerusalem, Nebuchadnezzar, and says, I want your checks. Send tribute to Babylon from here on out. So, while he was there, he said, you know what, I really like some of those vessels that you have in the temple. I'm just going to go ahead and take those. And he took them from the temple and put them for his god back in the land of Shinar in Babylon. Now, what does this mean? What does this mean to Nebuchadnezzar? Nebuchadnezzar, in his mind, thinks, whose god is greater, the king of or the god of Babylon or the god of Judah? Well, the god of Judah just lost, and he had home field advantage, right? That's where his temple was, and he still lost. So that just proves beyond a doubt that the true God is in Babylon. But did you notice verse 2 where it says God gave Jehoiakim into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar? Now that's interesting, and that's not how Nebuchadnezzar would have phrased that, right? It shows who is really in control. It's still the God of Judah. Nebuchadnezzar would say the God of Judah is not powerful enough to handle the God of Babylon, because they would credit their gods on whoever won the victory. So I'm the God is more powerful than Assyria, more powerful than Egypt, more powerful than Judah. But Daniel is very clear in verse 2. Saying this happened not because God is not powerful enough to handle Babylon. God gave Jehoiakim over. Why did God do that? It was because Jehoiakim was full of sin and he did evil in the sight of the Lord. So that is the context that we find Daniel 1 and what is going to happen next. So in Daniel 1, verses 3 through 7, we find out that Daniel and his friends were taken by force to Babylon. These were youths, as the Bible points out. They took the youths. And these would be youths as in teenagers at best. Because we know that once Daniel got to Babylon, he served past Babylon and into the Medes and the Persians under Darius, right? So he was there for over 70 years. Well, either to last that long, you have to be young, right, when you get there. But notice the criteria in verse 4, what Babylon was looking for. They were looking for youths who were good-looking, who were endowed with knowledge and understanding learning, and men or young men who would be competent enough or had enough confidence in themselves to appear before the king and serve him. So, they are dragged to Babylon, whether they want to go or not. But what did they do with them? So I kind of made this up, right? They went to the University of Babylon or Babylon University, whatever you want to say. But notice what Babylon did, what they are trying to do with Daniel and his friends. One, they wanted to teach them the literature of the Chaldeans. Now let's pause and think, what kind of literature would they be teaching? Well, whatever that would be, it would have a very strong bias towards the Chaldeans, right? Towards Babylon. Just kind of going back to our battle with Jerusalem, how do you think the literature of the Chaldeans history class, how do you think they would put those battles with Assyria and then again with Judah and defeating and taking things from the temple of God? So they would be taught with a very strong bias towards what they wanted to be taught. Same thing happens today, right? When we go to our history or science, and the question is asked, well, how did we get here? What is promoted more than anything? It's not Genesis 1, right? It is, well, we want you to think that this all happened by chance, right? And just give it enough time and it happened. So there's a strong bias towards what they're going to teach. They would then promote what is important to them. You must serve the gods of the Chaldeans because they're the most powerful on earth. Many things that they would teach, I guarantee you, would go against what was taught in the law of Moses and the prophets and so forth and so on. But they were indoctrinated in them, right, with the literature of the Chaldeans. They taught them the language of the Chaldeans. Speaking Hebrew is a thing of the past. From here on out, we're going to teach you the language of the Chaldeans, not just so you'll know it, but so you'll know it and you'll speak it. And everything is going to be done in the Chaldean language. They gave them the same food and wine that they gave the king, and they gave him new names, right? No longer will you be known as Daniel, you'll be known as Belshazzar, which was in honor of the god of Babylon. You are now named after a god of Babylon. And to Hananiah, Shadrach, and to Mishael, Meshach, and Azariah, Abednego. All of those names had strong influence with the gods of Babylon. That's what we're going to call you. That is your new name that you will answer to here in Babylon. Babylon was trying to help them forget about their Hebrew culture. You're now living in a new land under new gods, and you are going to submit yourself to Babylon culture. We're indoctrinating you to be a Babylonian now. You're no longer a Hebrew. But isn't it interesting? Look at verse 8, where it says, "But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king who has signed your food and your drink. And for why should he see that you are in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age, so you would endanger my head with the king. Then Daniel said to the steward, whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and deal with your servants according to what you see. And we know the end of the story is they ended up looking better than all the rest of them. And they say, okay, well, you can stick to the veggie diet, right? Isn't it interesting that Daniel says, you know what? You can teach me all you want about the literature. I'll even speak your language. I'll even answer to Belshazzar. But where I draw the line is I'm not eating the king's choice food and wine. The question is, why did Daniel draw the line there? Is that where we would have drawn the line? Maybe some of us would say, wait, look, I get it. I'm in Babylon now, but please don't call me a name after your God. Call me Daniel. There's nothing wrong with Daniel. Call me that. That's not where he drew the line. He said, I'm not going to eat the food or drink the wine. Now, what I was told a lot growing up is, well, the reason why he drew the line there was because in Leviticus, we see there's some unclean food. And he's not allowed to eat that, so that's why you draw the line there. It's because of what Leviticus says, what you're allowed to eat, what you're not allowed to eat. Well, the problem, or one problem with that, well, what about the wine? Were they allowed to drink wine? Yes, they were. It's interesting how Daniel says the word for food. And in the ESV, in verse 8, he will not defile himself with the king's food. Well, that appears in verse 5, in verse 8, verse 13, verse 15. Every time it's the king's food. It also appears one other time in the Bible, and that's also in Daniel chapter 11, verse 26. Daniel 11, verse 26, the only time that this word is used for food. It says, even those, Daniel 11, 26, even those who eat his food shall break him. His army shall be swept away, and many shall fall down slain. Now, we don't have time to look at Daniel chapter 11 and all the things that there are to look at there. But the point of this is, look, even those who eat his food shall break him. Like, we ate food together. We ate the same food. We're on the same team. Well, even those who ate the same food are going to turn against. So the idea is, if I eat this food, what am I claiming? What am I saying to those around me? I am on Team Babylon. And some say that the king's choice food may have been meat that was sacrificed to their gods. And Daniel says, look, I'm not on Team Babylon. And if I were to eat this food, what impression would I be showing everyone? I'd be showing, I'm right there with you. Daniel draws a line because his loyalty is not to Babylon, it's still to the God of Israel, the God of Judah. It's about what you do that's important. Daniel was willing to learn a new language, called by a new name, but he's not willing to affirm, I'm okay with what I eat, because it shows that I'm on Team Babylon, not with God. But you notice how Daniel opposed? I think that's important to notice. He doesn't say, I am not eating this food, and he throws it at the server's face, and you serve me just veggies. It's not how he handles it, right? He is very polite in the way that he says, I'm not going to do this. And notice it says that God gave Daniel favor and compassion towards the chief of the eunuchs. He was very open with Daniel, saying, look, I fear the Lord my king. And the more we look at Daniel, we can understand why he would fear this guy. He was unreasonable in many ways. Now, look, I fear him, and if y'all start looking worse off, it's going to be my head. Well, Daniel just said, look, just give us veggies, and we'll test this out for 10 days, and then you come back, see our appearance, and we'll go from there. And he says, of course, after 10 days, he and his friends looked healthier than the rest of them. When you oppose someone, when you say, no, I can't do that, because then I wouldn't be true to the Lord, you can do that in a polite way. And that's the way that Daniel chose to do it here. Well, Daniel and his friends gave us some fantastic lessons just in this first chapter. Whether you are going back to school, or whether you are in the workplace, or wherever God puts you, Daniel shows us that you need to shine your light for the Lord. Let's look at three applications. Number one, Daniel teaches us, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you will prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. That's Romans chapter 12, verse 2, 1 and 2. The world around us is not that much different than Babylon. I heard a very powerful lesson, a really helpful lesson to me, and it was entitled, Always Babylon. And the point that the preacher was making is, look, it's always going to be Babylon. The ideals of Babylon are the same ideals, right, that we are facing today. Nebuchadnezzar did his best to try to conform these men to become Babylonians. But Daniel was not going to have it. Notice, what was Babylon? What's important to Babylon? If we look at this chapter, what stands out to you is we are looking for young men, right, who are good looking, who are smart, and who have a lot of self-confidence, who can serve before the king. That sound somewhat familiar, right, to the world that we live in today? Aren't those the same ideals that are promoted in the world around us today? We lift up those who are young, who are good-looking, who are smart, and have a lot of self-confidence. The world, Babylon, is always going to have different values than God. So are you going to be conformed to this world, or are you going to be transformed by the renewing of your mind, proving what the will of God is? Well, how can we show ourselves different? Well, let's take those three ideas that are so important to Babylon, I would say so important just to the world in general. What we look like. How about how we dress? What's in fashion today is not always going to be what is appropriate to wear. And I would say especially for the women, it is difficult to find apparel that is modest. And it was a lot easier when Hannah was 5'4", but now it's getting a little bit harder. But are you going to be conformed to the world? Are you going to say, well, this is what's in, this is what looks nice? Or are you going to be, no, I draw the line. I'm going to be modest. I'm going to be pleasing to the Lord. How about how we act Are we going to be respectful? Are we going to try and cheat? Are we going to try to cut corners? Because that's what everyone else does. It's amazing to me the statistics on how many students say they cheat. And they say, yep, I've cheated. Well, everyone else is doing it. Nope, I draw the line. Because I know God is watching me. Even though I could get away with it, I'm going to be loyal to God. What about what we say? It's so easy to get caught up in gossip. It's so easy to tear people down, to make fun of. Nope, I'm going to build up. Whatever I say, it's going to be seasoned with salt, seasoned with grace. That's where I draw the line. That's where Daniel draws the line. He is loyal first to God. I love verse 8 of chapter 1. It's in the New American Standard. It says, Daniel made up his mind. I think the ESV, Daniel resolved in his mind. That's where I got the title of this lesson, The Resolve of Daniel. We have to make up our mind. This needs to be done with us. We need to make up our mind. This is what I'm going to do. These are my standards, and I'm not going to be wishy-washy on this. This takes preparation, right, on our part. Because if we try to decide in the moment what we're going to do, we're going to lose more times than not. We're going to read the Bible and say, I've made up my mind to Christ, be loyal and be true. I am going to be different because my allegiance is to God no matter what. You know how I know that no matter what? Because of Daniel chapter 3. When Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego said, I don't know if God is going to preserve our lives or not, but it doesn't matter. Because we are not going to bow down to that image that you've created. Our allegiance is to God. We have made up our mind, just like Daniel did, chapter 1. That's what we need to do. We need to make up our mind. Saying, I'm always, always going to be loyal to God. Well, that sounds good, right? Sounds, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. That sounds easy. I'm resolved to do that. But think about the context of Daniel chapter 1. What happened to Daniel? What happened to his three friends? It would have been really easy for them to give up on God. They were taken by force to Babylon, and it seems to indicate that they never returned home. Babylon came and conquered Jerusalem. The headlines in Babylon was the gods of Babylon beat up Yahweh. Yahweh is not strong enough to defeat the gods of Babylon. Their parents, they would never know if they were obedient to God or not, if they were loyal to God, because they would probably never see them again. Would it be reasonable for someone to ask in that situation, does God care about me? Why did God allow this to happen? God is so much more powerful than the gods of Babylon. Why did he allow me to be taken? Why not Joe down the street? Daniel had plenty of reasons to give up on God. But I tell you, he had even more powerful reasons not to give up on God. God gave Jehoiakim into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar. I like to think Daniel understood that. Daniel understood, even though it may seem like the gods of Babylon are stronger, I know that God allowed that to happen. Because there's no way God could be defeated. God is always in control. And we learn from the stories of Job and many others that God is in control of every situation and Satan is governed by him. Daniel says, God's still in control. And notice throughout this text that God was with Daniel in Babylon. You can take Daniel out of Jerusalem, but you can't take God from Daniel. Notice verse 9. God granted favor and compassion in the sight of the officials. God was with Daniel. Notice verse 17. God gave them, Daniel and his three friends, knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. You know what is expected of God to Daniel and what God expects from us? God expects us to be faithful and loyal to him no matter what the conditions are. We often quote 1 Corinthians chapter 10 in verse 13. It says, no temptation has overtaken you but such as common to man, and God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with temptation will provide the way of escape also, so that you will be able to endure it. Now, a lot of times what I hear from that verse, and exactly right, is we make the point that God is watching over us and he is protecting us. And that's exactly right. That's what that verse says. We know what that verse also says, that if we fall to sin, whose fault is it? That's on us. We can't blame God for saying, God, the temptation was too big, or the circumstances, I had no choice but to sin. No, God expects us to be loyal to him no matter what. And Daniel proves that. Daniel proves that. In order for us to do what is right, we need to make up our mind. We need to resolve in our mind, I'm going to be loyal and I'm going to be true. In Psalm 119, and I'll read 8 verses that were directed more towards the young. And you know this verse well. It starts in verse 9 of Psalm 119. And it asks a question. How can a young man keep his way pure? If you were to ask that question, how in the world can Daniel and Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego keep their way pure in Babylon? Well, he gives us the answer. By guarding it according to your word, with my whole heart I seek you. Let me not wander from your commandments. I have stored up your word in my heart that I may not sin against you. Blessed are you, O Lord. Teach me your statutes. With my lips I declare all the rules of my mouth. In the way of your testimonies I delight as much as in all riches. I will meditate on your precepts and fix my eyes on your ways. I will delight in your statutes. I will not forget your word. Again and again, in this psalm and in many others, the direction is, how can we keep our way pure? Goes back to Romans 12, right? It's be transformed by the renewing of our minds. What we think about, it's what's in our heart. And the psalmist says what we need to keep in our heart, what we need to be meditating on and thinking about, is God's word. You know what also helps? Have a good group of friends. That's what Daniel had in Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego. They said, Daniel, we're with you. We're going to be loyal to God. And they prove that in chapter 3, and they prove it here in chapter 1. Get with good friends. And I think that's why it's so important, especially to create good friendships, good relationships here. Especially for our kids, because that's what we're going to be leaning upon. And we want those friendships to shine through, because we have something in common. We both want to serve God. And that's what Daniel had in his friends. You'll be tested to find the word arrows in Daniel chapter 1. It's not there. But that's why I had Psalm 127 read before us. As a parent, it is really helpful for me, and I always kind of think about, man, I wonder about Daniel's dad and mom. And I would like to think that they steered Daniel in the right direction when he was young, so that when he was forced to go to Babylon, he stayed loyal to God even without them. Now, this is some supposing on my part. It could be, you know, if you look at the history of some of the kings of Judah, wicked Ahaz. He doesn't get much more wicked than King Ahaz. Who does he have as a son? Hezekiah. Manasseh produced Ammon, who produced a Josiah. So I grant you, and looking at Ezekiel 18, you can have a great grandfather with a terrible dad and a great son. I grant you that it could be that his parents weren't spiritually strong, but I sure like to think so. But that, be as it may, isn't it our responsibility as parents to lead our children to the Lord? It's important for us to make sure that our children have their own faith, not our faith. And I hear that more often than I need to, is when people go astray and they come back and say, well, I just didn't have my own faith. I had the faith of my parents. I just did what they expected me to do. And in some ways, we are failing if we just preach the rules and say, I want us to reason together. Let's think about this. Let's ask questions. Because there's going to come a time in life where you're going to be outside the home. And then you're going to be making decisions for you. Are you going to be loyal to God? Or are you just doing this to make us happy? Well, what are we doing with our arrows? I tell you, if we're just bringing them to church Sunday and Wednesdays, that's good. That's great. That's not enough. Are we teaching them God's Word? Are we showing them how God's Word is so important to us? I remember I preached a sermon on how we need to raise our children for the Lord. And I'm trying to think of her name. I can see her. It was a former member here. It's Jerry and his wife. Someone help me. Connie. Yes. Connie came up to me and just said something that was I'll probably never forget. And she said, you know what I wish I would have done when my kids were young? I wish they would have seen me read my Bible more. Now she said, you know what? I did that. I read my Bible maybe when they went to bed or before they got up. But they never saw, or maybe that's too strong, they didn't see me read my Bible enough. It's so important that our children see our love for God's Word. Are they seeing a love for God in us? Do they see that's just something that we do twice a week? Or that's what we do every day of the week? What we show them is so important. One day, they're not going to be under our roof. And the question for me and my wonderful wife, Misty, for our kids, are we preparing them for that day? Wouldn't it be cool? We have a bunch of little kids here. Wouldn't it be cool if we sent a bunch of Daniels and a bunch of Danielles into the world and just watch them turn the world upside down? I just get really excited when I think about the future here. Because I know we have great parents who love the Lord and want what's best for their kids. Let's raise Daniels. Let's raise some Danielles, if you will, as well. Think about how God used Daniel in Babylon. That's what God can do with our kids. I'll leave you with one more thought, and that is, how does the world picture Babylon? How does the world view Babylon? I don't know if I have the right answer or not, but here's one view of Babylon. Some of you have probably seen this before. This is the great entrance right into Babylon. All the parades would come through here. It shows Babylon in all of its glory. This is how a lot of people want to remember Babylon. Do you know something about that gate? That picture was not taken in Babylon. Shock, right? That picture was taken in a museum somewhere. You know what happened to Babylon? I don't know if you can read this or not. It's in Jeremiah chapter 50, verses 11 through 13. And I'll do my best to read it from here. Because you are glad that you is Babylon. Okay? Because Babylon, you are so glad. Because you are jubilant, O you who pillage my heritage. Because you skip about like a threshing heifer and neigh like stallions, your mother, Babylon, will be greatly ashamed. She who gave birth to you will be humiliated. Because, listen to this. Behold, she will be the least of the nations. Now, this is spoken of by Jeremiah in the height of Babylon's glory. Jeremiah said, or God through Jeremiah says, she will be the least of the nations, a wilderness, a parched land, and a desert. Because of the indignation of the Lord, she will not be inhabited. Mighty Babylon, not going to even be inhabited. But she will be completely desolate. Everyone who passes by Babylon will be horrified and will hiss because of all her wounds. What happened to Babylon? God wiped it out. And everyone who goes by Babylon just hiss at it. It's desolate. What's the lesson? All the things that this world values and lifts up, what's going to happen? It's going to be just like Babylon. Therefore, what should we do? We should be like Daniel. Put our trust, put our loyalty in the Lord, who is always going to exist, who is going to be here forever in eternity. Those are the things that I want to put my trust in, not Babylon, not the things of this world. Is there anyone here who is putting their trust in the wrong places? I would encourage you, as we just encouraged each other, to Christ, be loyal and be true. If we can help you in any way, why don't you come forward as we stand and as we sing?